preening his feathers. "I'm glad you're here," I tell him. He gobbles down the barnacles and shakes his feathers, which I take as a sign of gratitude. I wonder what he's really able to articulate inside that bird brain of his. Then I feel something wrap around my ankle before I'm tugged underneath the surface. I scream out a stream of bubbles underwater. I get my blade at the ready, heart beating furiously in my chest as I prepare to fight, possibly against a giant squid. When I'm able to break free and pivot, I'm greeted by Acre's smiling face. I kick at him with my spare foot and swim to the surface, coughing up the water clogging my airway. Blue takes flight when Acre emerges. He shakes the water from his hair, spraying droplets in every direction, and I throw any and every cuss word I can think of at him. He laughs, eyes sparkling with delight. It only serves to make me angrier. I splash water in his face. "I could have hurt you," I say, holding up my blade.
"Wouldn't have been the first time, now would it?"
he says, not even the tiniest bit repentant as his smile stretches from ear to ear. Ugh! I'm exasperated. I swivel toward the boat, then register the sensation of water cascading over the back of my head. He did not. I'm slow to turn back and look at him, seething with every breath. "Do it again," I tell him. "I dare you." He lifts a brow, pure bravado as he says,
"Or what?"
I don't deem his question worthy of answer. I think it's obvious it'll be something very, very bad. Light reflects off the water onto his face, highlighting the droplets clinging to his eyelashes and hair. His skin has gotten darker in the sun, losing the red from the first few days out at sea, and it somehow makes his smile that much more lascivious. Confident he won't splash me again, I turn for the boat. I untie the moor line around my waist and retie it to the cleat, fashioning a loop in the rope to use as a step up. I stab my blade into the hull and am about to step onto the line when Acre surges up, grabs me from behind, and throws me back into the water. Bastard! Murderous thoughts fight for dominance in my mind as I kick away from him and make for the surface. He pops up right after me, and I jump on top of his shoulders, forcing him back underwater. It's so satisfying getting him back that I splash him again as soon as he comes up for air. There's a predatory look in his eyes that sends me diving under the water. I know I'm a better swimmer than he is, so I dip under the boat to get away, emerging on the other side. I keep an eye on the water under me, on either side of the boat, waiting for a dark figure to emerge. I tread for so long I start to wonder if he gave up. Then, a shadow falls over me. I wasn't expecting him to come from above, and I look up to find him smiling like the devil. I swim back to put distance between us, but there's no use. He leaps into the water, engulfing me in his arms in the span of a breath. I kick and fight to get free, twisting in his hold, laughing when his fingers graze over the sensitive area of my stomach and ribs. His front is pressed to the entirety of my back, bare skin against bare skin, thighs and legs brushing along the length of mine. He's hot to the touch. He pulls me under the water with him, but it doesn't stifle the burning heat of the hand splayed across my belly or the other banded across my chest. It evokes inappropriate sensations that flood my system. It reminds me of the way it felt to be under Kai's influence, after the guard searched my room for Acre and Kai used his powers on me. Like, my body is not my own. There's no control or thought or reasoning to it. Just feeling. Touch. And the desire to be touched. Drawn to the warmth radiating from him. And it's not something I should be feeling with Acre. I manage to maneuver in his hold so that we're face to face. He must see the panic taking over me because his smile dims, arms slackening around me. I use my hands to push off from his chest and swim to the surface. The boat is already a distance away, and I push my arms and legs to catch up. It was reckless of us to leave the boat untethered. My back is to Acre when he gets aboard. I unbraid my hair and try to run my fingers through it, pretending to be too preoccupied to look at him. Pretending there's not a new thread of tension between us as we get dressed. He's first to break the silence.
"I didn't mean to upset you,"
he says,
voice low and unsure. I'm too embarrassed to meet his gaze. "It's fine," I say, not wanting to discuss my internal freakout. An internal freakout that's still very much underway. Wind whips my hair about my face, and I look at the weather vane, the cloudy sky overhead, then the sails as they bow in and out. It's been hard to tell where the change in wind pattern is coming from. I adjust the rudder, turning the boat until the sails straighten. I check the compass. There might be a storm brewing nearby. Up ahead, if I had to guess, we can divert around it, but get close enough to catch some rain if we're lucky. Acre sits across from me, dipping his head into my line of vision so I'm forced to look at him.
"Do you want to eat, in case the conditions worsen?"
I nod, grateful he's let the moment go. He scales and guts a fish. Blue is a bottomless pit we've discovered, and he's quick to catch the scraps in the air when Acre tosses them over the side of the boat. Filleting the meat into strips, he offers me a piece on the tip of his dagger. As I reach for a slice, I realize something horrifying, hand pausing mid-air. "Have you been using this blade the entire time?" There's a look of confusion on his face.
"Yes," he says, but it comes out more as a question.
Bile rises in the back of my throat. "You've been feeding me with the same dagger you put through a man's eyeball?" He narrows his eyes at me.
"Would you feel better if I said no?"
After a beat of silence, he takes my hand and slaps the raw meat into my palm.
"I cleaned it with the leftover meat. It's perfectly fine."
That's it. That's the final straw. I launch the fish at him, satisfied by the wet smack when it hits him square in the face. He blinks and wipes a hand down his cheek.
"You have the only other knife. What did you think I'd been using?"
If I was smarter, maybe I would heed the simmering calm in his voice, but I can't stop the revulsion from spilling out of my mouth. I didn't think anyone in their right mind would ever use a literal murder weapon as cutlery. He sucks in a breath, slow and measured, like he's using the seconds to calm his own anger.
"Says the woman who talks about gouging men's eyes out with spoons."
He stabs the dagger into the side of the hull and throws up his hands.
"Starve! I don't care!"
He doesn't have any qualms about eating with a murder knife, and we sit in stony silence as he finishes his meal. I do my best to ignore the hunger in my belly, hoping the lapping of water against the boat disguises the rumbling. I think I feel a single drop of water land on my nose, but nothing is there when I reach for it. I tilt my head back and inspect the gray blanket of sky overhead, but see no sign of rain falling. It must have been a stray drop of ocean water. I'm settling back into my task of pretending Acre doesn't exist when I feel it again, this time on my hand, then one on my forehead. I blink against the falling drizzle. Acre feels it too and looks at the sky, eyes lighting up, and he grins when our eyes meet. Within moments, it's a downpour. We're drenched almost instantly. I'm mesmerized by the way the water runs down the mast and glides down the string and into the well. I open my mouth and relish the sweet taste of nectar from the gods themselves. When I open my eyes, Acre's gaze is upon me. His expression gives away none of his thoughts. The rain casts a veil around the boat, reducing the visibility. I angle us eastward to avoid any worsening weather ahead, on a steep heel as the boat cuts to the side, the bow lifting over the whitecaps forming atop the water. The rudder jerks in my hand with each hit, but we remain steadfast for a long while. We needed this after sitting stagnant for days. If we can ride this wind, we'll make fast headway. As soon as I think that, the winds shift. The sails lose their billow, hanging from the mast like wet drapes. Shit. Acre leans forward to yell over the pounding rain.
"What is it?"
I shake my head, too scared to voice it, as if saying it out loud will make it more true.
"The storm changed course."
It's no longer moving to the west, but coming straight for us. The boat volleys back and forth as I fight the rudder.
"Should we turn back?"
Acre says.
"Try to outrun it."
Blue calls out, taking flight as he leaps from the mast, feathers rippling in the wind. I misjudged the severity of the storm. too excited by the possibility of catching rain to assess the signs properly, and it might cost us our lives. "We can try," I say, meeting his gaze, "but it might be too late." Chapter 20. It's pitch black. I've lost all sense of time and direction without my sight. The wind and waves batter us relentlessly. The pitch of the boat is at the mercy of the sea. We use our legs to create tension against the side of the hull by pressing our feet firmly against the opposite side, keeping hold of each other tightly, an unspoken agreement to not lose each other in the dark. For hours that feel never-ending, we withstand the storm. Every so often, the ocean bottoms out underneath us, leaving the boat briefly suspended in midair, and my stomach roils in protest. Water surges over the side of the boat in one dip, only to funnel back out the next. All we can do is hold on so it doesn't take us with it. The temperature has dropped. Each intake of water in the boat feels like fresh ice against our trembling skin. If the amount of water collecting inside the hull doesn't sink us, the loss of heat will be what does us in. Over and over, wave after wave comes. We don't speak. Words aren't going to save us. Then, a low, thunderous vibration permeates the air, drowning out the sound of water and ragged breaths and even the heartbeat inside my chest. I don't need to feel or hear it to know my heart has stopped beating altogether, because I know what's coming. I've only experienced the middle of a swirling sea storm once before, but it's a memory I will never forget. The way the air became impossibly more ferocious, rattling my eardrums and the trees and the entire grove, only for that awful, piercing silence to follow, when the water rose and swallowed half of Alaha. Many lost their homes that day. Some, their lives. I fold into Acre. He doesn't hesitate to wrap his arm around me. Placing his lips directly against the shell of my ear, he yells so I can hear him.
"Don't let go! No matter what, don't let go!"
He pulls me in tight against his body, tucking my head under his chin, using his legs and the arm not holding me to brace us harder against the inside of the boat. Rain no longer falls, but whips through the air like tiny needles. Lightning, the first we've seen in hours, spears from the sky. A sharp clack of thunder splits through the sound of roaring wind like a whip. Acre tightens his arm around me. It's a painful embrace, but one I'm grateful for as I clench his soaked shirt in my fingers. Then, like blowing out a candle, the wind and rain stop. Acre's and my own sharp breaths fill the stillness. The stern of the boat dips forward. Acre reinforces the tension in his arm and legs to stop us from falling forward with the tilt. The bow nosedives headfirst into the deep trough between waves, and we're in freefall. I squeeze my eyes shut and wait for the inevitable crash of wood slamming into the water below, for when our boat splinters apart and we meet our end. But it never comes.
"My gods."
Acre's voice is barely a whisper, but it resonates in my ear nonetheless. I open my eyes and lose all my held breath in a rush. Flashes of lightning come from every direction, like arms reaching across the sky and into the sea and everywhere in between. We can see the churning water and the wall of clouds and driving rain swirling around us as gigantic waves roil in the heart of the storm. A bolt of lightning hits one of the waves, illuminating the water underneath the surface with a bright blue glow before it fades to black once more. The air is electrified, and despite being thoroughly sodden, all the hair on my body stands on end. Another jagged line of electricity comes down from overhead, seeking the path of least resistance before striking the water not far from our boat, illuminating the water around us again. I gasp. Acre curses. Long, dark tentacles surround our boat, winding around us in the churning water. The bottom of the wave I was expecting to be our final blow seems to never have come, and we begin our ascent up the face of the next swell, almost like we're floating above the water surface. Almost like we're being carried. Acre doesn't let go of me. Not when the boat felt like it was going to be ripped apart at any moment and we were going to go overboard. Not in the center of the storm, and not when we breached the veil of the storm's eye. He never lessens his hold, not even when his arms shake. He never lets go. Chapter 21. It's a memory. I'm aware of it within my dream, the same dream I've had for weeks now. A bed made of down and pillows shifts to rolling hills of grass as far as the eye can see. There's a soft breeze, my strawberry blonde hair a fluid curtain around my vision as I intertwine the stems of wildflowers in my hands. I can feel the cool, damp ground beneath my bent knees. The smell of earth is strong, and my dress is yellow with white trim. I add another flower to my creation in my lap, a crown fit for a queen. My mother, of course, is going to love it. She loves everything I make her. A golden butterfly alights on the back of my hand, and I freeze, remaining perfectly still as it opens and closes its wings. "Hi," I greet it. "How are you today?" Golden butterflies are my favorite. Stomping feet stumble through the tall grass, revealing a boy. Then a second. They come to a stop before me. The butterfly flutters away. The only feature of the first boy I can see clearly is his freckles. They're prominent across the bridge of his nose and his cheeks, but I can't distinguish anything else. His body is like a vague mirage in the sunlight, but I know he's scowling. I don't need to see the expression to know it's true. He's always mad about one thing or another. I try to hide my crown from his view, but he clocks the movement and swipes it from my hands. "Making more of this rubbish, are you?" He places the crown on his head and turns to the second boy. "How do I look?" The second boy comes into view, brown hair and brown eyes and a full mouth, piercing in his beauty. He shoves the freckled boy. "Like a twat. I think I look rather distinguished." He prances backward and trips over a stick, hitting the ground with a choked sound. The brown-eyed boy bursts into laughter, walking past him. "Serves you right, you dimwit." He winks at me over his shoulder. The freckled boy, now grumbling, follows close behind until they disappear over the hill. I open my eyes. The familiar rocking of the boat is the first thing I recognize, the soft creak of its hull. Then, the blue sky and too bright sun. I turn my head, looking for Acre. My cheek is pressed against the inside of his arm, and I marvel at the signs of life within his chest. Every breath, visual evidence of our victory. We made it. Blue squawks from high in the sky. Acre's eyes open, and he blinks up in annoyance, scowling as the bird circles the boat overhead. Then Acre blinks, as if coming to the same realization I just did, and he turns his head to the side so his gaze meets mine. It's the gaze of the brown-eyed boy from my dream, just older and wiser, all his life experiences gathered within their depths.
"Hi,"
he says, voice soft yet rough around the edges. I can't prevent the emotion entering my voice when I reply, "Hi." He wraps me in a hug, and I don't allow myself the space to think about it too much as I bury my face in his chest, relishing the utter relief coursing through me with the knowledge that we made it, that we're alive. Looking worse for wear, but alive. We release each other at the same time, sitting up to survey the ship. The mainsail is halfway unrolled from the boom, but intact. The headsail, however, is dangling from its post and ripped in two. The mast and boom appear to be solid, and there don't seem to be any imminent leaks. With only the mainsail, we'll be slower moving but operational. It could be worse. I inspect the belongings we stored in one of the fishing wells. Everything is soaking wet, but that's to be expected. Acre scrubs a hand down his face and over his chin.
"I feel like I spent the night downing pints."
I retrieve the water skin and drink half of it before passing it to Acre. "Do that often, do you?" He empties the skin, throat bobbing with each swallow.
"I've had my fair share of fun. What about you? Fancy a helping of wine? Gin?"
"Alcohol isn't permitted in Alaha, but Kai did steal his father's mead once. We puked our guts up during morning conditioning."
He smiles.
I've had similar experiences of my own. Swore off drinking more times than I can count. Unlike me, Alice hasn't had a single drop to this day.
I begin to work on fixing the sails, tightening the halyard. Is he still as big of a twat as he was as a child? Aker goes still at my words, eyes locked on me as he comes to stand nearby. Keeping my expression blank, I retie the rope to the sail, satisfied with the new knot. He picked on me a lot, I say, meeting his gaze before moving on to the next. Aker leans a forearm on the boom.
He had a crush on you. Just didn't know how to express it properly.
I make a face. And what about you?
What about me?
He says, careful. You weren't much better, so what's your excuse? He doesn't answer, the silence stretching between us as I begin to raise the sail. It lasts until we have everything rigged and ready to go. Then he blocks my path to the rudder, forcing me to give him my full attention.
When did you start getting your memories back?
This conversation is already exhausting, and I kind of regret mentioning anything. Maybe since the market, I've been having these weird dreams. At first, I thought they were nonsense, but they keep getting more vivid, like I'm reliving certain memories. He studies me, as if he's trying to figure out if I'm withholding information.
I've wondered if your memory would return once we were back on land, but whatever hold Ren had on them might be slipping as you get further away from him.
I don't always remember them. Sometimes I wake up and the dream is fuzzy. With the strangest face, he asks,
What have you dreamed about me?
I'm surprised he skipped out on the chance to turn the question into a tease. I lift a brow at his inquisition and convince myself I'm not disappointed. Not much, really. Only this memory of you and Hallis stealing my crown of flowers. A crease forms between his brows.
A crown of flowers.
Of course, the one memory I have is so inconsequential to him that he doesn't remember it. That and the one time you professed your undying love for me. Color leaches from his face, so suddenly and totally that it gives me pause. His face morphs into annoyance when he realizes I was only joking, and I can't help the laugh that escapes my lips at his embarrassment. He turns away.
I was 9.
I follow him to the stern of the boat. What did you say? What did I say? He pulls the fishing rods from their storage place in the hull and begins inspecting them for damage.
I'm fairly sure I said you were the prettiest girl I'd ever seen.
I swear the tips of his ears are pink when he glances up at me.
You laughed in my face.
He glares.
Kind of like you're doing right now.
I struggle to tamp down my enjoyment, sobering my features as best I can. I'm sorry. He gives me a look that clearly says he doesn't believe me, but a smile twitches at the corner of his mouth.
You're kind of beautiful when you lie.
I'm stunned into silence, caught off guard by his admission. He gives me his back as he works on getting a rod set up for casting.
It was the day before you disappeared, actually.
I've watched him enough to know how he likes to string the lures, and I work alongside him to ready the rest of the poles. Perhaps I did run away then. I can see his smile in my periphery.
I'd be lying if I said it didn't cross my mind a time or two. But let's be honest, no girl would run from my pretty face.
I roll my eyes. I was 7, and from what I can remember, you were all gangly limbs and messy hair. I'm fairly sure I thought you had cooties.
I did have cooties. I grew into them. Now they're devastatingly handsome cooties.
Devastatingly humble, I murmur under my breath, tone dripping in sarcasm. He casts the first line and sets the rod in the holder on the side of the hull, turning his attention to me.
I'm glad we agree on both accounts.
I can't stop the heat from flooding my face. I agree, I tell him, careful to keep my expression blank as I stare at his undeniably stunning face. You are also beautiful when you lie. The gloating tease in his eyes narrows into confusion. Your match, I say. She isn't real. You lied to make a point about my feelings for Kai. He doesn't so much as blink at my accusation, a hint of a smile still poised on his lips, only a smidge sharper.
You mean your lack of feelings for Kai,
I roll my eyes again. I finish with my rod and hand it to him to cast as I begin on the next. How am I supposed to trust anything you've told me? He doesn't reply until I'm handing him the next rod. He doesn't take it from me. Instead, placing his grip over mine so I can't let go, forcing me to meet his gaze.
I haven't lied to you. I am matched.
The honesty seems to ring true as his eyes hold mine, unwavering under the heavy glare of sun overhead. I'm unnerved by the sinking sensation in my stomach. I tell myself it's from hunger and dehydration, not any unjustified feelings of disappointment. None at all. I didn't take you for a man who'd be indecent with another when you're already claimed. Another crease forms between his brows.
Do you mean the other day in the water?
I don't need to nod for him to know that's exactly what I'm referencing. He releases the hold on my hand, taking the rod from me.
I was wondering what upset you,
he says, casting the line and relieving me of his fierce gaze.
I figured it had something to do with your lingering feelings for Kai, but I'm pleased to know you're concerned with my loyalty.
Someone should be, I say dryly in admonishment. I leave him to manage the rest and take my position at the stern. I don't know what's worse, thinking him a liar or a cheat. Both are untrustworthy in my eyes. I suppose I don't know why I had any expectations of him at all. He finishes setting up the lines and takes his usual position across from me, back to the bow of the boat. It's early morning, but sweat already dampens his hairline, the moisture creating a sheen down to his throat.
My match hasn't claimed me,
he says.
We haven't married, so there's no covenant to break. I'm free to do as I wish, as is she.
I lift a questioning brow. With the way you spoke of the rarity of matches, I figured you wouldn't be so casual to dismiss it.
I've waited a long time for my match to accept the bond,
he says, expression pensive as he scratches the stubble that's been accumulating along his jaw.
Long enough, I think.
The words are spoken like he's sorted through the dilemma that has been plaguing him, like the weight of the decision has been lifted from his shoulders. He doesn't elaborate on why his match has not claimed him. I tilt my head to the side, looking at him from a new angle. And you said no girl could run from your pretty face. He laughs, and it's pure delight.
I appreciate the lesson in humility.
Chapter 22. Would you rather never eat bread again, or only have bread to eat for the rest of your life? The fish seem to have been sucked up into the storm because there hasn't been a single bite in days. We're out of food and down to our last dregs of water. Clouds have closed in on us once again, and we're sailing without any clear course. I'm trying my best to be optimistic, but it's difficult when my empty stomach is determined to make its presence known every waking minute of the goddamned day. Aker grimaces at the options, eyes closed, head propped up with a folded arm.
That's worse than the snake arms ultimatum.
Well, which is it? He peeks at me through one squinted eye.
I guess I'd never eat bread again.
I am outraged. You're a masochist.
Who needs bread when there's steak?
He resumes his lounging with a smile on his face as he closes his eyes again.
Would you rather be hairy all over or have no hair at all?
I groan at the reminder of the state my hair is in right now. I've tried my best to keep it in a plait, but the salt water and wind have whipped it into a snarled frenzy. Who needs hair anyway? You have to wash it and brush it, and it's always in the way.
I bet you would swim really fast without it, like a fish.
I recast one of the lines. I change my mind then. You might actually mistake me for a fish and eat me.
Joke's on you. I'm plenty hungry enough to eat you now, with or without hair.
There's a beat of silence where the connotation takes on a whole other meaning, and my cheeks burn a fiery red color. I don't look over my shoulder at him, pretending the innuendo went over my head. Should I throw the net out? Aker snorts.
You said it yourself. The net isn't going to drag deep enough as it's meant for fishing near the reefs. Plus, it'd only slow us down. You'd just be exerting more energy than you have without any substance to fuel you.
He turns over like I assume he'd do if he were in a real bed.
Matter of fact, You should rest.
I'm not tired. I lie. I dare a glance at him, and he's staring at me with lazy eyes. He knows I'm exhausted. He feels it too. The ocean has a way of doing that to you, sucking the life from your bones a little more each second. I can't imagine the anguish we'd be in if the sun was out in its full glory. Small graces from the gods, I suppose.
Wake me for rotation,
he says after a moment. I nod. The day gives way to night, and the clouds don't move. It feels like there's a heavy blanket over everything. Acre doesn't shift an inch as he slumbers on the deck. The air is thick and humid, making each breath harder to take in than the last, and I'm so fucking thirsty. I keep my fingers on the lines. With the barest of reflection of moonlight to see by, there's a chance I could miss the pull or dip of a line, so I cycle between the few we have cast. Every so often I check the compass, making adjustments on the tiller when needed. Time kind of runs as slowly as forever and quickly at the same time, so much so that I'm surprised when the clouds come into focus little by little with the morning light. I nearly leap out of my skin when Acre breaks the silence, voice hoarse from sleep.
I slept the day away.
I reach for the water skin and hand it to him. Actually, it's morning. He freezes mid-reach, eyes clearing as he looks from the sky to me.
I slept through the night.
I shake the water skin for him to take. Like a baby.
Why didn't you wake me?
You needed sleep. He sits up.
And so do you.
I drop the container in his lap. How's your side? He doesn't bother to look before he says,
it's fine.
The quick dismissal isn't convincing. I saw it when you got in the water the other day, I tell him, revealing the truth. It's not pretty. Have you been putting the salve on it? He knows he's caught.
I used it all.
Uncapping the water skin, he takes a minuscule sip before handing it back to me, its weight no different than before.
You've been sneaking glances at me while I'm undressing. I'm flattered.
I take my own minuscule sip and ignore his attempt to divert the conversation. It's infected.
I don't think the mead was top shelf.
He jokes. Let me see it.
Trying to get me undressed?
When I don't so much as blink at him, he loses the pretense, expression becoming serious with his next breath.
It's not as bad as it looks.
Then why won't you show it to me? He stands up, towering over me in the next instant.
Because you're worrying for nothing. It'll heal the moment we get to land.
You act like it's right over the horizon, I say, growing frustrated by his nonchalance. We might not see land for weeks. What will you do when the fever sets in? He shakes his head once.
It won't.
How do you know that? I all but yell, voice cracking from my unshed emotion. He has the nerve to smile at me.
I've survived too many things far worse than this for an itchy wound to be the thing that takes me out.
I choke on the scoff attempting to escape my throat. Your arrogance won't save you, I seethe.
Neither will your worry.
The softness of his words sucks all the fire from my veins, leaving a hollowness in its wake. He's slow to lift a hand to tuck my wiry hair away from my face, like he's afraid it'll spook me.
You need to rest. The mind plays tricks when it's been restless for too long.
I know he's right. The desire to close my eyes pulls at me. I've been fighting it all night, and as if our argument has doused any energy I had in my bones, the yearning for sleep becomes more potent by the second. I nod, giving in. There's a noticeable slackening of his body, like my submission eases his own worries. He grins.
Good.
His one-word answer feels incomplete, like he intended to say more and stopped. But I don't have time to ponder more on it as I lie down and close my eyes, propping my head on my pack. I'm out within a minute. Chapter 23. My next shift, I think about Kai and what he might be doing. It's difficult not to. When I came to the decision to leave, I told myself I wouldn't look back. I'd focus on moving forward to where I've always wanted to go. Home. It's a place that now feels like a myth. Maybe the ocean never ends. This is the hell I've heard of. Not fire, but an endless, fruitless reservoir. I wonder if Kai thinks about me at all, or if he's too busy constructing his own plans, moving his chess pieces, doing Kai things, conniving. The hunger is gone. That's a nice reprieve. Every now and then, a stabbing sensation will shoot through my abdomen, but other than that, all is good. Well, other than the unrelenting thirst, but I'm only allowed to think about that every other swallow. I've forbidden it. Even Blue is less interactive. He has to be even hungrier than we are. Surely he would fly off to find food if it became dire enough. Unless he does intend on eating Acre. I look up at him perched on the weather vane and find him sleeping, head tucked under a wing. Good gods, I'm in the early stages of delirium. I've heard stories of soldiers who went mad. Messer told a story passed down from his grandfather about a fisherman they found after he'd been lost at sea for half a year, said he ripped all his hair out. Maybe I will be hairless. My gasp jerks Acre awake. Oh, hey, I'm sorry, I whisper. Didn't mean to wake you. He leans on an elbow to get a better look at me in the dark.
What are you doing?
Contemplating pulling my hair out. He makes a face, half amusement and half confusion.
Please don't. Contrary to what I said, I rather like your hair.
I smile and run my fingers down the nearest fishing line. I'm just waiting for a bite. There's a stretch of quiet where all we can hear is each of us breathing and the gentle lap of water against the boat. That is, until he utters two words that stop my breathing altogether.
Come here.
His voice is deep and heavy between us. He motions for me to come with a wave of his hand.
You're not going to catch anything tonight, and I don't trust you to wake me to switch out.
I whisper my darkest thought. Sleeping feels like giving up. He huffs out a breath and shakes his head.
I'd wager quite a bit on the number of times you've ever given up on something,
he says, a dry grin on his lips.
It's less than 5, undoubtedly.
It's my turn to breathe out a laugh. After a moment, he demands,
Come here.
The tiller isn't going to move. Look at the sail. It hangs limp from the mast, not a trace of wind to ruffle it. I stink, I warn.
I know. I can smell you from here.
I shoot him a murderous glare, but it only serves to widen his smile, and I cave. I release the line and scooch in beside him, careful to leave space between us as I lie down on my side. There's barely enough room for one fully grown adult, let alone two, and I contort my arm to create a makeshift pillow. After my third shift in search of a comfortable position, Acre extends his arm in my direction. I stare at the inside of his forearm, pondering my options.
I'm not going to bite you,
he says.
Not today, anyway.
His teasing provides enough levity for me to relent and use his arm as a cushion for my head, without it feeling weirder than it needs to be. He also smells alarmingly nicer than I do. First thing on the agenda tomorrow is a dip in the ocean. You said you could smell me. He rolls his eyes.
I'm sure I smell just as pleasant as you do. Kind of cancels each other out.
No, back in Alaha, in the brig, I clarify. You said you could smell that I had been in it.
Ah, it's the iron in your blood.
You can distinguish between people? He thinks about it for a moment.
Sometimes. It depends.
On?
How familiar I am with someone, I suppose. It can be as unremarkable or as memorable as any scent.
He leans in and inhales, nostrils flaring wide, a kiss of a smile in his eyes.
You smell like wildflowers, the kind that grows on the hills of Kenta.
I can feel the course of my flesh reach from the top of my head to the tips of my toes. I try not to appear as affected as I am, but it's hard to do when he's smiling at me with his stupid mouth and his stupider, teasing eyes. He makes a face.
Underneath the stench, I mean.
It breaks the spell I'm under, and I swat him in the chest with my free hand. Laughing, he traps my hand beneath his, between us.
Sleep, Jovi. You can extract your retribution on me tomorrow.
I don't need his permission to sleep, but I can't deny I'm comforted by Aker's insistence. I feel like death warmed over. If he doesn't see the harm in both of us getting some rest, that's plenty convincing enough for me. I trust him, I realize. Not fully. Not yet. But I think he's smart and loyal. To some degree, at least, which is more than I can say about most people back in Alaha. Then I close my eyes and dream. It's the same one where I'm in a comfortable bed full of pillows, a bed fit for a giant, it's so large. I'm waiting for the transition to the meadow where I'm making a crown of wildflowers, but it doesn't come. Instead, I'm fighting to remain asleep. I like the bed and I don't want to wake just yet, but something keeps tugging at my shoulder.
Jovi.
I rouse to find Aker nudging me, his expression full of excitement and urgency.
Look,
he says, eyes darting up. I look up and stop breathing. Stars. Coating the sky instead of clouds, countless pinpricks of light reflecting off the flat plain of the ocean as far as the eye can see. The water is so still, a tranquility I've never seen before, converging where the sky and water meet to create a sphere of unfathomable beauty in every direction. The boat is unmoving, as frozen as the water beneath it, and it's as if we're a part of the sky. I lean over to get a better look at the reflection on the surface of the water. It feels like I could dip my hand in and touch a star, the mirror image from above unwavering.
Have you ever witnessed anything like this before?
Aker whispers. I shake my head. Never.
Can you make out any of the constellations?
There are more stars than sky. I'm unable to pick out any sort of configuration or shape I've studied before. I shake my head. If he's disappointed by my answer, he doesn't show it, his eyes as wide as mine. He stands and pulls the fishing lines from the water, sending the starry reflections scattering in every direction. I stand too. What are you doing? He stashes the rods in a hurry and pulls his shirt over his head.
I'm going to swim with the stars,
he says, as if the answer should be obvious. He shucks off his pants just as quickly and stands on the side of the boat.
What are you waiting for?
Then he winks at me and dives in, sending the illusion into ripples of light. He emerges and shakes the water from his hair, smiling ear to ear. I can't help but follow. Past the point of modesty, I strip to my undergarments and slip into the water. It's cooler than I expect, and a shiver racks my body. I try to keep my movements to a minimum under the water to preserve the reflections. Blue caws from above before taking flight. There's no wind for him to rely on, so he only makes a circle once before returning to the mast, as if he, too, wanted to experience flying with infinity. I lie on my back, and Aker does the same, floating next to me. We don't speak. There's no need to. We stay like that until our skin is wrinkled and our exhaustion takes over. It feels like hours have passed by the time we climb back into the boat. We're too tired to wait to dry and dress, so we lie down without a care for immodesty. The night air is perfect against my damp skin. It's the calmest I've felt since... I can't recall a memory before sleep claims me. Chapter 24.
Thought I'd never see the day he would turn down food,
Aker says, throwing the guts of his latest catch into the water. Blue fluffs his feathers and continues to preen on the bow of the boat. Perhaps he's tired of fish. I know I am. The thought of eating another bite makes me nauseous, but so does starvation. He might go for some barnacles. The hull probably needs to be scraped anyway. If you want to take over the tiller, I'll dive down. He shakes his head.
I'll go,
he says, rinsing his hands in the water. It's just a flicker of pain, but I catch the wince he tries to hide as he stands. He strips off his shirt and I glimpse the purple, mottled skin on his side before he shucks off his pants. Even with a lack of meat on his bones, his muscles flex with every movement. From the power in his thighs to the smaller muscles along his ribs, his strength is still very much evident in the lean lines of his body. He He ties the rope around his waist and steps off the boat into a dive. It's pure grace. After the night where the stars and ocean became one, the fish returned in plenty, and a smattering of downpours allowed us to collect a little bit of water in our well. But with the disappearance of the clouds came the sun, high in the sky and blistering for vengeance. Acre comes up with a handful of barnacles. He wipes the water from his eyes and swims to the side of the boat. He clicks his tongue at Blue and places the crustaceans along the edge of the hull one at a time. The bird flies down, landing a few feet from Acre, curious but cautious. Acre treads water backwards to give Blue some space as he hops to the nearest shell. He inspects it, head tilting this way and that, picks it up with his beak, and hops a little closer to Acre. Then he proceeds to throw the barnacle in Acre's face. It pings off his forehead before splashing back into the water. Blue squawks at him before taking flight, knocking over half of the remaining barnacles in the process. I'm stunned, speechless. I look at Acre, who looks just as astonished as I am.
That's the last.
He trails off, eyes caught on something over my shoulder. I turn just in time to watch Blue flying swiftly past on the tail of a seagull. He yells a battle cry and opens his mouth, gaping maw looming as he dives for the bird, which is oblivious to its impending doom. Gull captured, Blue lands on the stern and swallows. A muffled squelching can be heard from inside the tiny bird's body, and I blanch at the wet sound. Sick. Acre's excited gaze meets mine as he treads water.
We're close to land.
My lips thin, eyes scanning the horizon. There are a lot of small islands and reefs scattered between Alaha and Kenta. They're teeming with food, so birds frequent them, but I grasp at the hope anyway. It feels better than the endless barrage of misery I can't figure out how to escape. Acre finishes scraping the bottom of the boat. We are quiet for the rest of the day, but there's a noticeable energy as we work, our attention constantly returning to the horizon. It's like we don't want to curse our luck by voicing our doubts. I'm in the middle of slicing a fillet of fish for drying when the first wave of nausea hits me. I don't think much of it. The heat is brutal, so I make a conscious effort to stretch my ration of water into smaller, more frequent sips. It's dusk when Acre takes another dip in the ocean. I think it helps soothe the heat radiating from his infection. I haven't brought it up again out of fear of disturbing the mild truce we've cultivated. Plus, he's right. There's nothing to be done about it. Not until we're back on land. A dizzy spell hits me like a wave, and I have to squeeze my eyes shut to stop the world from turning on its side. Until it happens again. And again. I have to put down my blade and breathe through the bile threatening to creep up my throat. When I steady myself, I look up and spot the dark smudge of land in our direct path. We're too far away to tell for sure, but it stretches far enough to possibly be more than an island. I lean over the side of the boat. When Acre surfaces, I'm able to speak one word and point to the horizon. Land! Then I puke my guts up. Chapter 25. Acre keeps his sight fixed on the shore as it comes more clearly into view. A small beach of black sand nestled between black rocks, and seagulls roosting along the boulders framing the outcropping. As the land looms closer and closer, Acre becomes more and more tense.
There's only one place with black beaches like this.
His mouth is set in a grim line.
This is Roysen territory.
The map we were shown back in my Alaha school days was simplified. There weren't titles or boundaries, only the topographical markers laid out with dotted lines. But I remember my teacher pointing out Kenta in the center and Melee to the northeast with mountains along the border. Then further left, smaller, but not by much, Strau territory. And all the way back to the other side of Kenta lay Roysen and its black sand beaches. We've overshot our destination, going too far east and passing Kenta's shores entirely. Acre curses under his breath.
We should turn west, head back toward Kenta.
I jerk my head back. Absolutely not! He tears his gaze from the shore, eyes homing in on me.
Chris, their leader, has allowed rebels and bandits to have their way with the land. It's the worst place for us to venture into.
What if we get caught in another storm or blown off course? We've been surviving on scraps for weeks, and you want to turn your back on the first land we see? No, it's too risky.
Jovi, you're already feeling the effects of the awakening. It's going to be 10 times worse once we reach land, and you want to suffer through it while in enemy territory?
We won't survive at all if you succumb to the sickness in your veins, I tell him, pointing to his side. You said you'd heal on land. Well, there it is. I swing my finger to the beach. Right there. He clenches his teeth.
There's a peace treaty, but it's fragile. If Chris finds us in his territory, it could reignite the war.
A piercing pain begins to pulse behind my eyes, and I squeeze them shut, opening them again once it abates. We should swing the sail if we're turning around. Aker pulls me in by my elbow.
How bad is it?
Terrible. My head is screaming and my stomach wants to revolt, and there's a flashing light in the corner of my vision that I've been ignoring. I'm fine. He's not convinced, but releases his hold on me anyway. I turn to untie the boom, then hear his loud sigh.
Stop.
I look at him questioningly over my shoulder.
We should take it down and row the rest of the way to shore. Less of a chance of being spotted.
I stand up straight. Are you sure? You said...
I know what I said.
He mutters.
Just promise me you'll follow my orders once we touch down.
You have my word. He is somehow even less convinced than before. We take down the sail and gather everything we can bring with us. It's not much, but plenty enough to weigh down the pack. When the waves begin to break, we row with our backs toward the beach. It takes fortitude not to look over my shoulder with every stroke. I hate putting my back to the enemy. It's nightfall by the time we make it close enough to the beach to disembark. Aker jumps from the boat first, then I follow suit. The water initially feels freezing cold before it shifts to a scorching temperature against my skin, a shock of ice before the burn, as if I've been thrown into a pot of boiling water. I yell as I flail to stay as far above the waves as I can. The beach and rocks and lack of vegetation should have been a warning. The water is obviously uninhabitable. I reach to find purchase on something, anything, to save me, only to be met with nothing but searing pain as the water passes through my fingers. One look at Aker tells me everything I need to know. He's not struggling. The water is fine. It's just me. He swims toward me, worry on his face, but I don't wait for him to reach me. I swim for the shore with all my might. I need to get to shore. There'll be relief once I'm on dry land. But I'm wrong. So very wrong. My knees hit the sandy bottom of the shallow water where the waves break, and I yelp. I stand, but my legs immediately give way from the pain lancing through them. I realize there's no escape. I tread the water, lifting my knees to my chest so I'm no longer touching land, tolerating the searing pain. There's no way out of this.
Jovi!
Aker yells, stomping through the crash of waves to get to me. I can't disguise my pain, my fear sending me into full-blown panic. A day of this, maybe two, he said.
I can't!
I cry, unable to make myself leave the water. He doesn't bother asking my permission before reaching down and placing a hand under my legs, the other under my back to lift me from the water. It offers mild relief, but it doesn't last long. Each step forward brings another level of torture as we travel further onto land. The blinding light that was in the corner of my eyesight grows to encompass everything. We reach the rocks lining the shore, then move past them to where the sand turns to grass. Blue swoops overhead, staying low as Aker marches with me in his arms. He, too, knows the importance of being discreet. I can't tell how long it takes, but we reach a wooded area where trees loom over our heads. They're not like the trees of Alaha. These are thin, with smaller leaves and more widely spread out. Aker stops in a small clearing.
We should have enough coverage to wait here for your awakening to pass.
He kneels, and I cling to him. Please. Not the ground. Please don't put me on the ground.
Jovi, he says,
breath brushing over my hair.
The only way forward is through.
I know he's right. There's nothing I can do to prevent the inevitable, but I'm tempted to beg him to take me back. Back to the boat? Back to Alaha? I know I'd hate myself for it, so I bite my tongue until I taste blood.
I'm going to set you down now,
he says, soft but stern. I nod, releasing his shirt from my tight grip. The moment the ground meets my back, I scream. Acre cups his palm over my mouth, hand cradling my skull as he lowers my head back the rest of the way. I can't stop it. My body contorts itself in an effort to escape the pain. I can't hear what Acre's saying. I can see his lips moving, but there's no sound. All that exists is the pain, like lightning through my veins. My heartbeat is my very own death march, each thump fueling the fire. His voice finally breaks through the roaring in my head.
Please, Jovi,
he says, desperate. I struggle to remain focused on his face. His mouth moves, but his words are garbled, face warping as he continues to speak. No, plead. He's pleading with me.
I need you to quit screaming. Please.
I clamp my teeth shut, fighting the outburst, begging for escape. Acre's chest heaves as he lets out a gust of breath.
I'm sorry,
he says. Over and over, he apologizes.
I'm going to try to find something to make it better, okay?
Tears stream from my eyes, but I manage a nod. I urge my body to relax, trying to unclench my muscles, but it's next to impossible. Each breath, each pulse of my heart feels like an attack against myself, like my own body is revolting. I feel the magic beneath my sternum. It's swirling and changing, reveling in the agony I feel. This doesn't feel like a gift. It feels like a punishment. I sense Acre's presence before he speaks.
Chew this well before you swallow it.
He holds a leafy plant to my lips. Acre cups the back of my head, settling it on his thigh as he brings the water skin to my mouth. Most of the water spills out of my mouth and down my chin, but I somehow manage a couple of swallows. Acre pushes my hair back from my forehead, running his hand over my brow again and again, a soothing gesture. I fall into an open pit of slumber. Chapter 26. Everything is convoluted. The sky is purple and the grass is red and the trees swirl in the wind. I'm eating a pastry at the table in the kitchen, looking through the open door to the tilted world outside. Mother brushes my flyaways back behind my ear as I kick my feet under the table. She's smiling, but I can't make out her face through the rain. It's pouring inside the house, soaking the table and floors and walls without touching us. I'm upset, but I don't remember why. Go see him, she tells me. I brush the crumbs from my hands and get up to walk toward the doorway. The rain disappears when I step outside, the sky a deep shade of plum as the sun dips over the horizon. I reach for the pail on the stoop when I spot it, the one thing that's crystal clear in my mind, like it's been plucked from another world. A crown of wildflowers sits on top of the pail. I reach for it, and I jolt awake. The sky and trees looming overhead are back to normal shades of blues and greens. My stomach rebels, and I groan as I roll onto my side, hacking up what little remnants are left in there. Acre comes into view as he kneels beside me, face pinched with worry as he pushes my hair away from my face.
How do you feel?
Like shit. I retch again, his lips thin as he takes in my appearance, holding the water skin to my mouth so I can drink. The ground rolls like the sea beneath me. Why is the ground moving? I say, voice weak.
It's not. The Saigon root I gave you can cause fever dreams, sometimes hallucinations. I was hoping to give you enough to make you sleep through most of the pain, but you burned through it quicker than I thought you would.
Yay me. I have a spotty recollection of Acre shuffling me from one area to another, but I have no sense of time or place. The trees all look the same. The sky is clear, so it must be about midday. The sharp edge of pain isn't as prevalent.
The pain,
I say.
It's better.
Not gone, but no longer eating me alive. Aker looks at me, skeptical.
You look terrible.
I huff out a broken laugh. Thanks. I suppose, in comparison to his fresh-faced appearance, I must look like I'm on the brink of death. Where the land seems to have sucked the life out of me, it breathed new vigor into Aker. The hair falling onto his brow seems to be shinier, eyes brighter, shoulders wider. I swear his skin is glowing.
We can't stay where we are for much longer. The boat ended up capsizing south of here. It's drawn attention to the area. We're going to have to travel further inland than I'd like.
Blue lands on his shoulder, and I really must be hallucinating because he fluffs his feathers and chirps, settling in like they're not mortal enemies.
He's been keeping a perimeter, checking for rebels.
The bird hops off his shoulder and onto the ground, chasing a beetle between the leaves. Our safety is in great hands, I see. Great feathers? Talons? Whatever. Aker reaches into the pack and tears off more leaves, holding them up to my mouth. I shake my head.
I can wait it out.
There's no sense in you suffering for the hell of it.
I dig my fingers into the soil at my sides, resistant to the offering in his hand. But even in my fingertips, I'm made all too aware of how feeble I am. I despise this, hate being the weakest link. Blue is more helpful than I am right now. When Aker threatens to shove the leaves down my throat, I shoot daggers at him with my eyes, but he only lifts a brow in response.
Try me.
He dares. I open my mouth, and he feeds the torn pieces onto my tongue. I use what little energy I have to snap my teeth down as hard as I can, despite the slice of pain it ignites behind my eyes. He jerks back, but not quick enough, and I'm able to nip the tip of a finger. He hisses, returning my stare with a vengeance. Hand braced on the ground beside my head, his anger morphs into a cunning smile, like a snake in the water, smooth and precise.
Sweet dreams,
he says, eyes alight. Maybe pissing him off when I'm on the verge of losing consciousness wasn't a good idea, but I fall asleep without an ounce of worry or fear for my safety. Chapter 27.
Put me down.
He doesn't listen.
Put me down!
I'm hanging over Aker's shoulder like a child. This gets added to my list of least favorite ways to wake up. I don't want to tell him, but...
You have vomit on your shirt.
I'm more than aware,
he says, stepping over an uprooted tree. The ground tunnels in and out of focus with the movement, and I'm grateful there's nothing else left in my stomach. I lift the material, inspecting the knife wound on his side. No longer open and discolored, the area appears healed, but the skin is mangled. I poke it. He shudders from the touch.
Stop it.
I drop the hem of his shirt. It's your fault for forcing me to eat the plant of nightmares. The dream lingers in the back of my mind. I was being chased by a giant bear with glowing red eyes and claws the length of my arms dragging along the ground, which shifted and rolled like the ocean. If it's a memory from my past, it's not one I'm eager to get back.
You can't hold me against my will,
I say, putting as much conviction into my voice I can muster. I can feel more than hear his huff of annoyance before he shifts my weight off his shoulder and I'm flipped upright. My legs give out from under me, and Aker lifts me up by my armpits to steady me. He gives me a look.
That's what I thought.
This time, he cradles me against his chest when he picks me back up. It's been 3 days, I say, head bobbing against his chest as he walks. You said the awakening would have passed by now.
4 days,
he corrects me.
It's been 4 days.
Four?
You've been in and out. At first, I thought it was the Saigon route, like you'd had an adverse reaction of some sort, but you shouldn't still be in this much pain.
He looks down at me in his arms, worry etched around the lines of his eyes. He doesn't need to say it for me to know something isn't right. I feel it. Inside me where the magic lives. It's made itself small. Like it's hiding. From what? I'm not sure. It's almost as if it's scared.
A band of rebels have picked up our trail. Blue has kept an eye on their movements, but sightings of them are sporadic. I've been trying to shake them off the past 2 days without much luck. Every time I lose them, they backtrack to pick up our scent again.
How many men?
The last Blue reported was 12, but that's assuming we can trust a bird's ability to count.
Despite my extra weight, Acre stalks through the woods on sure footing. Quiet, but strategic as he avoids twigs and wet ground. He's been doing this for days with no sleep, and it hasn't deterred him in the slightest. It magnifies how useless I am. Literal dead weight in his arms. And I threw up on him. We're on a slight incline as Acre marches downhill. The forest floor is littered with a carpet of dead leaves, but tufts of vibrant green peek through the layers, moss and ferns and leafy bushes. We were taught about the land in Alaha, what each part of the continent's ecosystem consists of, where the native plants and animals live and thrive, which are poisonous and which are edible. But illustrations in a book are nothing in comparison to real life. The sounds and smells and sensations, birds and fresh blooms and humidity. There's a desperate sort of urge to fall to the ground and dig my fingers into the soil and feel the very essence of the earth in my hands. Acre comes to a halt.
What?
He shushes me. Head cocked to the side, he's sensing something, I realize. Then he begins walking in a new direction. I can't tell if we're going toward or away from the something until there's a break in the trees up ahead, and I hear it. Running water. We emerge onto an embankment of rock with a rushing stream flowing before us. We're in a gorge, snow-capped mountains visible between the treetops in the distance, so far away they're hazy around the edges. There's a bend downstream, the water disappearing out of sight between the trees. I try to gauge the difficulty.